time of the year when people start to think about love and relationships and special people in their lives. And later in the week, people will try to bring happiness to ourselves and other people through candy and cards and making plans to celebrate love and that sort of thing. And if you don't do those sorts of things, and you ought to, then you should be making plans for asking for forgiveness and making it up to that special someone if they are expecting something like that. Or maybe you have another option. You could join us by going to Haiti because she cannot reach you there. I'm just saying. Just throwing that out there. But I had this idea for this series on love and happiness right here in this room. I was standing up in the balcony about a year ago when I heard a concert. I don't remember who was playing. I don't remember anything about it, but they played a particular song. They played this song right here. Come on now. Yeah. Love and happiness. That's it. You know the song? Something golden wrong. Someone's on the phone. Yeah, get into it. All right. 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Yeah. Do I wait till the chorus? Talking about how she can make it right. Watch everybody. Everybody slow down in the room. They got this, like, sultry look on their face. Really, you know? And I listened to the words. And the band did a knockout job playing it. They did great. Okay? Everybody started singing when they got to that chorus. Hopefully it's coming soon. There it is. There it is. Right there. Yeah. All right, that's good. And everybody in the room was thinking about one kind of love, okay, and one kind of happiness. And that kind of love, you have to say it differently, it's love, all right? And that's kind of the thing that we think about maybe during this time of year with Valentine's Day coming up pretty soon. But there's way more love and there's way more happiness than that kind of love and that kind of happiness. But I just got to say, that little lead-off electric guitar, you know, Chris, I bet you could nail that. Yeah, there's nothing better than that. I love it. So even back a year ago, I had this idea, hey, we should do a series on love and happiness, and it wouldn't have to be just about marital relationships. That a lot of churches will do an entire series or a whole month on marital relationships, and we're not going to do that. Next week, we are going to talk about it. We hope you're here for that with Mindy. I mentioned that earlier. But if maybe your marriage needs a kick in the pants, then just go home right now, put that song on, see what happens, and, you know, whatever. But next week, we'll talk more about it, like, from another more professional standpoint. Now, when you're a kid, at least when I was a kid, the question about depths of relationships kind of went like this. You had family, and then you had friends, and then for the guys, you had girls. You know, there was family, friends, and girls. That's basically it for relationships. And when it came to the girls, the question went like this. Do you like her, or do you like her? You know what I mean? Do you like her, or do you like her? And like her meant something way different than just like her. You were just more than just friends. It was something romantic. And now I'm talking about like elementary school days, middle school days, that sort of thing. And so if you, at that point, if you purchase or receive a Valentine's Day gift for someone other than a relative, that means you like her, or you like him, or whatever it is for you. That's the romantic type of relationship. And today, and in this period of love and happiness series that we're doing, we're not limiting ourselves to that particular kind of relationship. We're going to talk about all the kinds of relationships that we have. So back at the beginning of this church venue that we have, the Engage New York, we started a series called Origins. And if you were here in those days, we were talking about Genesis and Origins, and we talked about Genesis chapter 2 and how we discover that God designed humanity to have a variety of different relationships. And the Bible's very clear. We have relationships because God designed us to have relationships. We're meant to be in relationship together. We're meant to connect with one another. We're meant to live life with a one another kind of sense. Not only are we designed for connection with each other, we're designed for a connection with God. But then Genesis chapter 3 tells us why those relationships get hard. Every single kind of relationship gets hard because of what Genesis chapter 3 talks about. And relationships sometimes just aren't fun. It can be unenjoyable to have certain relationships in your life. But we're not talking specifically about difficult relationships either, because I just want to talk about depth and dimension of relationships today. The depth of the relationship is dependent upon the dimension of the relationship. So we all live in various types of relationships and various forms of relationships and with lots of different kinds of people. So here's what I mean. Different kinds of relationships. And I want to kind of whip through these pretty quick. So you have work relationships. If you are in the workforce, you have an employer, a boss, and probably your boss has a boss, and maybe your boss's boss has a boss. You know what I mean? There's like this hierarchy, unless you are the big boss, and then in which case you probably answer to the shareholders, and they're your boss. So like we all have this accountability structure. And then there's workers, you have coworkers, employees, employers, that sort of thing. Then in the home, there's all kinds of family relationships. We're talking about parents and spouses and siblings and children and aunts and uncles, cousins, grandparents, whatever it is for you. And that's just the ones who are blood related to us. There's all kinds of other family dynamics that happen in the home. And then socially, you have friends. And under the friends, you got close friends, friends, not so close friends, Christmas card friends, boyfriends, girlfriends. Like there's just varying levels of depth depending on the dimension of the relationship. Church. In the church, we have church people. And then there's church family. You know, there's a difference. You know, if you don't know that person very well, yeah, we go to Engage. Okay, so do I. I've never seen you there. But we're not church family quite yet. But there's a difference. And then probably pastors, sometimes you might see the pastor a little bit differently than you do just regular church folk. Now, school is another part. How many students and teachers are in here? We've got a lot of you guys. Teacher, student is similar to employee, employer in a way. In the school, you might have your friends there, you have classmates, teammates, you might be in the choir, the band, drama, whatever it is, you have relationships in the school. Business, these are like connections you might have socially out there in the world. You have a banker, a hairdresser, servers, a guy at Home Depot, whatever you have, you know what I'm talking about. You have people out there that are relationships. In the community, what do you got? Athletics. Out on the ball fields, there's social and service-oriented clubs. There's all kinds of relationships that we have. And all of these relationships have varying degrees of depth depending upon which dimension they're in. In other words, you don't treat your teacher the same way that you treat your sibling, right? At least you better not, right? Mariah's a teacher. You wouldn't want your kindergarten, right? You wouldn't want your kindergartner treating you the same way they treat their sibling. Not at all. You don't treat your spouse the same way you treat your guy at Home Depot, do you? No. You have more investment of time in your spouse than you do with the server at the restaurant, or you better. You better. These things are all true. You have different depth of relationship with different people in different relationships. So, and that once they get out of whack, that's when you have a mess on your hands. Relationships exist in dimensions, and we need to have them properly aligned. All of them, all of your relationships exist in one of three dimensions of relationships, and it's beautifully illustrated through Jesus' actions in Luke 6, 12 through 9. Here's Luke 6, 12 through 9. It says, "One of those days, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray and spent the night praying to God. When morning came, he called his disciples to him and chose 12 of them, whom he also designated apostles." And then he lists the apostles out: Simon, whom he named Peter, his brother Andrew, James, John, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James the son of Alphaeus, Simon who was called the Zealot, and Judas, the son of James, and then Judas Iscariot, who became a traitor. He went down with them, and he stood on a level place. And a large crowd of his disciples was there, and a great number of people from all over Judea, from Jerusalem, and from the coastal region around Tyre and Sidon, who had come to hear Jesus speak and be healed of their diseases. Those troubled by impure spirits were cured, and the people all tried to touch him because power was coming from him and healing them all. Last week, I gave a financial report for Engage Newark, and I quickly described this three-dimensional of dimensions of up, in, and out as a model for us to follow as a church and individuals. And I use the tool that I'm about to present to you and give to you at the end. Well, actually, you already have it on your tables probably. I use this tool consistently to evaluate my own life, my own depth of relationships with people, and how I'm doing modeling Jesus' pattern in my own life. So what I'm going to do is explain the dimensions first and then give you the tool. With Jesus, everything started with his relationship with the Father. Very simply, his upward, his vertical relationship with God. And throughout the Gospels, you can see Jesus escaping off by himself from time to time to pray and just spend time with God. And before he started his earthly ministry, he spent 40 days in the wilderness out there praying by himself, and he ended up being tempted by Satan. You can read that in Matthew and Luke. And then in Mark chapter 1, you can see right after Jesus calls the disciples, he sneaks off by himself out early in the morning to pray and spend time with God. And then the disciples come looking for him, and they're like, oh, there you are. Hey, we've been looking all over for you. People want to see you. And then he goes out to do his work of ministry. So Jesus started everything with his relationship with the Father. The fruit of his ministry, his life, his living was rooted in the strength of his relationship with God the Father. So Luke shows it to us like this. This is verse 12. And if you got notes, you want to put in your notes, this is just up. Very simple, up. Verse 12, one of those days, Jesus went out to the mountainside to pray, and he spent the night praying to God. He literally went up a mountain, but the focus was on an upward relationship with God, and Jesus called God Father. He referred to him as Father, and we can see that in the Sermon on the Mount in particular, where he teaches the disciples to pray. He uses the Greek word that we could translate as Papa. It's a very familial term, like saying daddy. It was a very relational way of speaking to God as Father, which would have been groundbreaking for the people at the time. Like, it's kind of familiar to us, but for the people at the time, like, well, you have too much, you don't play loose with God, have more respect for him than just daddy or papa. But that's the kind of relationship Jesus modeled for us. And sometimes people have a hard time seeing God as Father. I understand that. Simply because early earthly fathers can be bad examples of what fatherhood should be like. All right? Some of you had... I have a good dad, to be honest with you. I love my dad. He's a great dad. But some of your dads were crap. And it's hard for you to see God as Father. I understand that. And that's hard for you to get over that. But people who didn't have the privilege... It is hard to see God as a benevolent, loving Father who wants to have the best for them. It's hard because some of you have never had a male authority figure love you enough and want the best for you. So I would encourage you, as you focus on your upward relationship with God, let God redeem your idea of Father. Get to know God as someone who's not looking to cast you out, but a loving Father looking for every reason to include you in. Search out God as a loving dad who accepts you simply as a son or as a daughter, not someone who is an angry being looking out for themselves and using you for only what they can get out of you. I love the adoption analogy that's used over and over in the Bible, that God, an ever-loving Father, chooses you, adopts you, accepts you, makes you part of the family, knowing everything about you already, knowing all the sins that you've done and all the sins that you've not done, like things that you should have done but you didn't do, all the terrible things you've said to people. He knows all that stuff already. And yet, if you believe in His Son, Jesus Christ, He brings you into the family. He puts His name on you. He gives you His inheritance. He puts you as a full member of the family, co-heirs with Christ. God loves you and accepts you. You just need to receive His Son as your Savior. And what other reason would you need to work on your relationship with God, that upward kind of relationship? Last week I used a piece of pipe as an analogy for God's blessings flowing through. If you're here, you might remember that. And in terms of our giving, we're just meant to be a pipeline through which God's blessings flow. Similarly, in our relationship with God, our upward relationship with God, we're meant to be a spring, okay? A pipeline of continual flow, not a bucket or a cup. We say things like, we need to get filled up at church, or I need to have my cup filled up. And I've said those things many, many times. We need to fill up our cup. And I get it because I understand that analogy. But really, we should be a never-ending wellspring of blessing, continually being replenished in our relationship with God, overflowing that cup. Don't just fill up your cup, overflow that cup so it's continually flowing from God. And Jesus worked His outward ministry from a position of strength in His upward relationship with God the Father, continually outflowing from God into the lives of others. So all this idea of up, I don't know how it works for you. I don't know what it means for you. Jesus did it by going up to a mountain to pray. That's not exactly practical for us. He could do it on multiple occasions. There's a mountain around. But He did have a daily rhythm to take time to pray. He worked on His upward relationship with God the Father. So maybe we can't go to a literal mountain every morning to go out and pray. It'd be really cold anyway, like right now, to just like do that. Maybe we can do that for times of retreat, you know, have spiritual retreat, solitude, but it's not daily practice for us. So I would just ask you, what is your daily practice? What do you do? How do you work on your relationship with God? Just like the best way to show your kids that you love them is to spend time with them. Because you spend time with them, they know that you love them. It's the same way with God. The best way to show God that you love Him is to give Him some time. Time is probably one of our most precious commodities and resources. So if you can spend time with God, He knows you mean it. And one thing that we do corporately here, collectively, we spend time with God. We sing songs. Carrie and the band are awesome. They lead us in singing. And hopefully you get messages that are impactful to you and practical. So we give Him time. But I mean, not just a weekly 1 hour and 10 minutes a week kind of thing, but I mean daily rhythm. Give Him some time every day. Here's what I do. I'm just telling you what I do. I do my time in the morning before I get out of the bed, because as soon as I get out of the bed, I'm not going to do it. I'm off to the races. So I just do mine before I get out of the bed. And I'm doing this like read through the Bible in a year program. I did this because it's on my phone. I hold it like this. I read through the couple chapters a day that it gives me to read. And thank God I finished Leviticus today, because that is a very difficult read. I wouldn't encourage you to start in Leviticus because it is not very practical. But so that's what I do. And then I spend some time in prayer after that. And sometimes, honestly, I fall back asleep. I just do. And I wake up and say, amen, you know. But a continual type of prayer with Him, it helps me to stay consistent if I'm on a program like that. Sometimes I listen to sermons. I got about 3 different pastors. I listen to their sermons every week. It just helps me. But that's it. I haven't always done that. I've done different things. I've done nothing at times, not had any program. That's just what I'm doing right now, and I've been doing it for a couple years. And it works for me. What works for you? What works for you? How about you? I think there's 2 keys to helping you work on your upward relationship with God. And the first one is time. Have a time that is consistently your best, where you can be your best. Maybe at 5 o'clock in the morning, that's not you. Okay, that just happened to be when I'm awake. But for you, it might be at midnight or 2 a.m. or 3 in the afternoon. Whatever it is for you, where you can consistently be at your best at a certain time. The second thing is place. The place that is consistently private where you can focus. So you don't have all kinds of other distractions going on. Where you can be focused. Jesus went to a mountain because that's where he could focus. No disciples were bugging him. People weren't asking for healing. He had to go away. Where is your mountainside that you can go and consistently have time where you can focus? So the key word to me is consistency. When we're working on a relationship with God, it's consistency. Jesus practiced consistently working on his upward relationship with God. Be consistent. Develop consistent patterns that will help you grow. And so here's another little wrinkle I just want to throw out there. You can't make yourself more spiritual or righteous. Right? You can't make yourself be a better person. Only God can do that. And you can put yourself in a position where God can do that. And the way you do that is having a time and a place where you can focus on God and then let God do God's work in your life. It's preparing the soil and letting God's seeds that are planted in you already start to blossom and grow, all right? So that's up. It sounds like a lot, but it's really kind of simple. Love God and allow God's love for you to fill you up so that God's love flows through you into the lives of others. And that's where we go next. In. So Jesus moved from a position of strength in his upward relationship to his inward relationship with the disciples. It says, when morning came, he called his disciples to him, and he chose 12 of them, whom he also designated apostles. And it lists all of them, all right, the 12, Simon, Peter, Andrew, James, John, Philip, all those guys. And the first thing Jesus did was to look for community. He looked for relationships. He went out, got 12 dudes to hang out with and teach. And then within that 12, he had three that were his closest associates, as Peter, James, and John. And whenever Jesus sent out people, he always sent them out in groups of two in general, in community. He sent 72, and those 72 went out in pairs. And he sent the disciples out to look for a donkey. He sent two out to go get that donkey. Humans were created for relationships. We hunger for them. We long for human connection. Even introverted people need to have people around. People, as much as they might not admit it, you know, they might not like to admit that they need people. They need people. Mike Breen, who inspired the triangular picture with the up in and out, he writes a story about Danny Wallace and the Join Me movement. I like this story, so I thought I'd share it with you. Danny Wallace and the Join Me phenomena, it was 2 years ago, like at the time of this writing, an out-of-work film producer went to the funeral of his uncle, Orberry. He was a Swiss man. And he listened with rapt attention and interest to the man's story during the funeral, his rather tragic life that he had. This guy who had died, he was after World War II, he wanted to form a community of 100 people to live together. Yet the most that he was able to gather was three. So after the funeral, Danny was inspired, so he placed an advertisement in the personals of the local paper. He just said this, join me, send a passport photo to this mailbox. That was it. Join me, send a passport photo to this mailbox. And someone sent him a photo and an Indian takeaway menu. And the guy suggested that he try the chicken korma. I've never tried that before. So Danny went to the restaurant. He bought the chicken curry or whatever it was. And then he went to that guy's house and he shared it with him. Within a week, 15 people had responded to that publication he'd put in the local paper. And it only said, join me. These were ordinary, lonely people living in London. So Danny started a Join Me website. And in no time, he gathered 100 people. Danny got to chatting with one of the guys on the internet, and they agreed they should meet in Leicester Square for a drink the next day. So Danny went, and a guy in the chat room the next day wrote, I met him. Danny realized they were talking about himself. He had become this cult leader all of a sudden. So Danny got everybody together. One of the girls said, "We don't do anything. If we're going to be connected, we need to do something. Otherwise, I'm out." So Danny got them all together for a picnic in Hyde Park. He left a tape there for them to be played on a portable cassette player with the message he had recorded. He said, "I would like you to do random acts of kindness to anyone you meet in the park." And so that became known as Good Friday. Everyone thought it was a great idea. They bought food. They bought train tickets for people in the park. And so as people met in the chat room, they decided they wanted to do it every week. No religious veneer. They just started meeting to do good things for other people. They found out about a guy called Arthur. Arthur was an ex-prisoner who they had given money to. Apparently, he had scammed $6,000 during life as a con artist. And they thought that this was a very poor return on a life's earnings. So they agreed to give him $150 a week if he promised never to do it again. And before they knew it, they had thousands of dollars coming in for this guy. And so now this is kind of a global phenomenon. This wasn't a church, all right? This is not a church doing good deeds for people. These were just people who found a common bond together in helping other people. They established their own inn because they knew they needed other people on their inn. They needed people together. They established it themselves. Inn is what we want to do really well here at Engage. In fact, we created Little Arrows Play Cafe to help us bring new people into a new sense of in for themselves, because we know there are lots of families out there who are all having similar struggles and positions in life, especially perhaps young moms with young children, and they're disconnected from one another, so we create a space where they could have an in. And think about your own life. Where do you experience in? Where do you experience connections with other people? What is interesting in this day and age of a higher level of connectivity than the globe has ever known before because of social media, which we're going to talk about in a couple weeks, we are about as disconnected as we possibly can get as a culture. So where do you experience your end? Usually home is number one. Home is the place where you have your closest relationships. Then probably at work or school maybe. You probably have some great relationships at work and school, people who would be your friends. Then what's next is where you have relationships that would be your in. Where else would you have them that's maybe not work or home? Lots of people go to the ball field or the basketball court or to the gym, or the summers they go to the pool, whatever it is. These kinds of places are called third spaces, where people gather to find connections with other people. In fact, we worship in a primary place for third space. That's a bar. Right downstairs, there's a bar. There's a bar up here, too. They have concerts here. People come and just gather and hang out because they have an in connection. I'm not encouraging you to like drink to excess or just drink or whatever, but go down to the Bootlegger on any random night about 8:30 to 9:30, and you'll see people who are hungry for an in. They want to have connections with people. Little Arrows is that in for a lot of folks. It's a safe, positive, fun third space where people can receive a connection with other people. In becomes your primary relationships. These are people you can speak truth to, and you can receive truth and love in return. They can be truthful to you. So who is your in? Where can you find your in? Here's another couple of things. Developing your in have to do with time and space again. Where can you meet with the people in your in, and where will you do it? When will you do it, and where will you do it? But while the key word to up is consistency, I think the key word to in is vulnerability. Being vulnerable so that you can know and be known, so that people can reach into your life and love you the way you need to be loved, and you can do the same for them. Getting to know others while they get to know you. All right, and then lastly is this, out. Verses 17 through 19. It says, he went down with them, being the disciples, because he just called his 12, and he stood on a level place, and then a large crowd of his disciples were there. Now let me just say this. We call the 12 the disciples, and that's true. There was 12 disciples and apostles that he had specific, but there was actually dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds and hundreds of people who followed him around pretty much all the time. And then there was 5,000 who gathered, you know, on a hillside, and he broke bread for them. But so this large crowd of his disciples were there, great number of people from all over Judea, from Jerusalem, from the coastal region around Tyre and Sidon. They come to hear him and be healed of their diseases. Those troubled by impure spirits were cured, and people all tried to touch him because power was coming from him and healing them all. So we have up, we have in, and then we have out. Jesus started with his relationship with God, then he worked out his life in community with the disciples, and then he went out to do his average daily works of ministry, you know, like feeding 5,000 people, healing sick, you know, driving out demons, forgiving sins, average stuff, you know. But there's a strong tendency for Christians, and in particular, to sequester themselves to a holy enclave so that we keep ourselves pure and untainted from the world. So we develop our own bookstores, and we have our own blue pages. It only lists just the Christian companies there. And we have our own radio stations, our own schools, and our own symbols that no one else knows so that we can recognize one another and we keep ourselves pure. And then a disagreement of theology breaks out, and then the whole different enclave develops because now we got to be pure from those other people who are also Christian, but not quite like we are. They don't have the right kind of theology. Folks, Jesus never lived this way. He never sequestered himself off with the disciples to have this holy enclave. Yes, he retreated on occasions for the purposes of up and in, but they never stayed there. In fact, on one occasion, they were up on the mountain. Peter, James, and John were there, and it was so fantastic. We call it the Transfiguration. Peter's like, hey, let's build houses and stay up here. And Jesus says no, and he turned his face to Jerusalem. And they went. In fact, Jesus sought out. He went to. He looked for the least, the lost, and the lonely. Jesus looked for the marginalized. Jesus took paths that would take him right through the heart of areas where people hated who he was, and especially in Samaria. Jesus went directly to the outcasts. He went to the lepers. Jesus went and chose a tax collector to be a part of his inn. All of these things were earth-shattering amongst the people who were religious at the time. And they're still a little bit earth-shattering today for religious people, especially those who are stuck in a holy club mindset. Our faith is not a faith of a holy club. If you want to call it a club, then this club is the only kind of club that actually exists for non-members. We don't exist for ourselves. We exist to reach out, to bring people in and point them up. Or we could say it differently because it works this way too. We exist to reach out, to point people up and bring people in. And I'm talking about relationships. Healthy relationships will model how Jesus navigated these three dimensions of relationships, gaining strength from a personal relationship upward with God to build an inward relationship with a core group of people who go out to make a difference in people's lives. There's a sense in which these things ought to be balanced, like an equilateral triangle, because if one area is emphasized over another, then your triangle becomes an isosceles or a scalene or other geometric terms that I don't remember from middle school and high school. But you know what I'm talking about. We get out of whack when we emphasize one over another. So what do you do? One way is to evaluate yourself, to give yourself a score of 1 to 10 on the scale on each of the three dimensions. Score yourself. How am I doing up? How am I doing in? How am I doing out? Give yourself a score, and where you have a low score, that's probably where you probably need to give some attention. There's a second sheet that was handed out to you today. It's kind of a yellowish color. I'm giving this to you as a resource that you can use, as a tool, so that as part of maybe part of your uptime this week, however you spend your uptime, do this. score yourself and wherever you're low, take a peek at it, think about it. Below that, there are questions for each category up in and out. Read through those questions, especially on the category that you scored lowest in, and then look for the question that hurts the most. Look for the question that you would least like to answer in front of God and everybody. That's probably what you need to work on. You don't have to tell anybody, but you could tell your in people, this is what I'm working on, and this is what God's leading me to do. Here's another thing you can do. Don't do it all in the same time. Do it at a different time. Go through the whole process again. This time, look where your highest number is, and look at the question in the category that would be the funnest, most fun question to answer, something you could brag about. Like, woohoo, I'm good at this. God, thank you for working in my life so that I can celebrate this and I'm good at this. So that's just a tool. Last week I told you that we as a church body have invested our money using this tool. By doing that, I discovered an area of growth and an area of extra attention that we need to give as a church. And so we created a way to do that over the next 6 months. We made a plan. We're going for it. So I simply encourage you to do the same with your life. I put myself through this probably once a month or so. I just kind of check in on myself. How am I doing with these things? Up in and out, three dimensions of relationships that Jesus navigated clearly and effectively. We all have them too. Jesus had them. We have them too. Up, in, and out. So what is God saying to you? Where do you need to grow? And how can God help you get there? Let us pray. God, we thank you that relationships are an important part of our lives, that you've created the structure in which we could have relationships with each other and with you, and that this church is a place where we can explore our in, and we can live in our out, and we can worship you effectively here on Sunday mornings. But may that not be the end of our relationships, but just the beginning each week of experiencing discipleship relationships and going inward with our family and our friends to help us grow closer in the likeness of your Son, Jesus Christ, and then moving out because we can't keep it to ourselves. We got to tell other people. So God, be with us as we go from here today and live out our discipleship, and we come back again next Sunday. We ask that you be with Mindy as she presents the message for us. Be with the Haiti team. Be with all the things that we have going on in our community and our world. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.